Happy Friday, everybody. It's Larry Jacobs here with K-12 Education Talk Radio. Actually, it's not Larry with the Jacobs. It's Larry with a cold Jacobs. I have a head cold of some sort, so I probably sailed it, all right, and I apologize for that. Okay, I usually have a much deeper bass of voice, but not today. It's a little cloggy. Okay, hey, we got a great show for you today. I've got someone from Johns Hopkins School of Education, my good friends over there, and this is Kelly Siegel Steckler. She's a research fellow over at Johns Hopkins Institute for Educational Policy, for Education Policy, which we work with a lot. She's a PhD candidate over there. That's a big deal. We're going to talk about their new social studies knowledge map. As everybody knows, I'm an old social studies teacher, emphasis on both old and social studies. And they've created this whole idea of what knowledge truly means, all right, and why it matters. These folks are experts, all right, in civic development and political socialization in schools. I work with Ashley Burner, my good friend over there, a lot. We talk about this quite a bit on these shows. It's really fascinating, okay? So we're going to talk about how all this relates to social studies curriculum and teaching, and also about this new tool that they have, which I believe becomes available on Monday, but we'll talk about this. Today's September 25th, so I think it goes on Monday is when it becomes live, but we'll find out from my new best friend in the whole world, Kelly. All right, I'll bring her on in just a second. We're going to archive this show, just like we always do now, all right, at our equity website, which is ace-ed.org, because Education Talk Radio is part of our American Consortium for Equity in Education. So if you go over to ace-ed.org, 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 again, American Consortium for Equity in Education, you'll see a big icon for Education Talk Radio podcast. You click through on that. All right, and you'll have everything we're doing over here, which again is part now of the consortium. Always have been, has been. We're just making it a bigger deal, letting everybody know that that, in fact, is the case. They've never been separate. They've always been together. And we'll put a new schedule up there for Education Talk Radio for next week, tomorrow on Saturday, just like we always do. We tweet over at EduTalk Radio. We Facebook at my name, Larry Jacobs, and Education Talk Radio. And we link in at Larry Jacobs, which is still my name. Okay, I hope you friend us, follow us, link with us. More importantly, join our consortium. You'll love our magazine over there, which is Equity and Access. We want your voice heard in equity. And now, without further ado, the one and only Kelly Siegel Steckler. Hi, Kelly. How you doing? It's Larry.
Good morning, Larry. How are you?
Well, I am fine, except for this stupid cold.
Okay. It's that time of year, though, isn't it?
It is. And I live in Maine, so, and it's nice. But, you know, it was 45 degrees the other day, and now today it's 80. So it's cold weather. So what can I tell you? And I have got it. And by the way, I want you to know I'm very proud of you, as is everyone you know, for being a PhD candidate at the Johns Hopkins School of Education. But just so you know, had you gone to the University of Larry, you would have already had your degree.
Well, let me tell you, Hopkins doesn't make it easy, but I'm almost
See, that's my point. We do. It's 140 character thesis, okay? We put it up on Twitter, and we give out doctorates. So we'll just think about that in the future for the next one, okay? Hey, congrats. I love the folks at Johns Hopkins, and that Center for Education, the Institute for Education Policy is great. And obviously, you're working with Ashley over there, Dr. Burner. And, yeah, when are you getting your PhD?
Hopefully in March. That's the plan right now.
Wow, congratulations. That is a big deal. And what are you doing these days? What is your job now these days? What do you do?
That's a great question. So I do a lot of research for Ashley and the Institute related
right.
to curriculum and instruction. So this knowledge map is a big part of that. I'm writing my dissertation full time.
On what?
I'm writing about how teachers create an open classroom climate for discussion. So how teachers can use their instructional practices to make sure students feel comfortable exploring controversial ideas, making up their own
Wonderful.
Minds about things. It's been great.
That sounds great, and we could use more and more and more of that. I wish, in all seriousness, that's a big deal. okay? And to get a doctor from Johns Hopkins is a big deal. So congratulations. That's wonderful. And I'm sure that's going to happen in March. Okay? And
Thank you.
And just when you go in to defend your thesis, if I may mention my name.
Will do.
That should help. That should help without question. Okay. All right. The Johns Hopkins University, JHU, Social Studies Knowledge Map. That's kind of interesting. It's an interesting title. Why is it called the Knowledge Map? And what's it for?
So the Knowledge Map is a new tool that we have that helps us evaluate social studies curriculum, not just on whether it's meeting standards, state standards, or whatever standards schools are working with, but really looking at the knowledge and content that it's imparting to students. So rather than just looking at, does it tick these boxes in terms of, you know, students are writing persuasive essays or they're learning about the Constitution, what knowledge are they getting grade on grade year after year? How is that sort of spiraled up and giving them sort of all of the background information that they need in order to be able to, you know, have a robust understanding of our society and how they can play a part in it.
And when you say it's a knowledge map, by the way, I said it's going to become available on the 29th. Was I right? That's Monday. Was I right? I think it's Monday.
Tuesday, the 29th, we are having
our national release.
Great. There's a webinar at 10 a.m. that we will be sort of presenting to the world, the new tool, and it's open to the public. Everybody is welcome. And if you go to our Twitter, which is at JHU Ed Policy, you can find a link to register and see what we're doing.
Okay, so go to Twitter at JHU Ed Policy. There's a webinar at 10 in the morning on Tuesday the 29th. Okay, it's open to everybody. And should it be just social studies teachers or should it be administrators? Who do you want? Who should be there? It should be. And by the way, what grades are we talking about? Should elementary school teachers know about this? Yeah.
Yeah, we're evaluating curriculum from pre-K to 12. And, you know, actually, social studies in the elementary grades is really important. It's hugely foundational for students and often overlooked. So we've been really lucky. It's been really interesting for me sort of doing these evaluations to learn a lot about what students are getting from social studies as part of their early childhood education and sort of the foundation that that lays for them throughout their lives. Right? Things like what are rules and why do we have them? Basic principles of geography and economics, and it's not something that elementary educators should be overlooking either. So if you're a teacher, if you are an administrator, we would love to have you.
Excellent. And as I said, I used to teach social studies, and I love teaching it. And it's really – this is really, really important. And, I do a lot of work with STEM, science, technology, engineering, and math, and that is important. Okay, but nothing, and I have to say this like I always do, nothing happens in STEM. It doesn't happen for no reason. It happens to benefit society. Okay, that's why we have science, technology, engineering, and math. Okay, and if people don't understand social studies and its implications on the people, okay, what they're doing in STEM will hurt them. Okay, they've got to understand social studies, and we have let that go for too long a period of time, and so I'm thrilled you're doing this. This is great. See, we're on the same wavelength here, okay, Kel?
Absolutely. Yeah, I think it's really important. And, you know, the reality is that science and engineering happens in teams, right? People aren't, you know, discovering a cure for cancer by themselves all of a sudden at once. It's really a group effort, and it requires a lot of the same skills and ability to build on each other's knowledge that you're getting in social studies, right? And then understanding how to make sure that you're communicating those findings to people, knowing, you know, what they're going to do for society, what kind of identifying what problems you want to solve and how they're going to help people.
Yeah.
You know, STEM doesn't exist in a vacuum. It's really important.
Thank you.
All these skills,
exactly.
No matter who you are, what you're doing.
Yes, exactly.
Unless
STEM
you're
does not
in
exist
cave
in a vacuum. That's why. And we let social studies go for too damn long. I got to tell you that right off the bat. And I'm speaking as an ex-social studies teacher. I got to tell you. And we are paying the price. We are paying
the price. Oh, I completely agree.
Yeah, so believe me. So that's all I'll say. That's all I'll say on that particular part. And I do think it's important. By the way, I want to reiterate that to Kelly. Okay, studies. Okay, the educational determinants. I love this of civic development, political socialization in schools. Ashley's an expert on that too. Ashley Berner. Okay, and how it all relates to social studies curriculum and teaching. This is really, really key stuff. All right, and this is what does this look like? When we see this for the first time on September 29th, does it literally look like a map? What is it? Why do you call it a map? What does it look like?
So that's a really great question. So we do produce heat maps, and that's partly where the term map comes from. So there's sort of three core components of the evaluations that we're doing with the knowledge map. So the first is that depth, breadth, and sequencing of content. So, you know, the first thing we did when we made the knowledge map was I sat down and I spent several months trying to build a map of all of the possible content in the social sciences that students
wow.
could be learning. So what are the major
wow.
domains and sort of core topics within those domains? So everything from, you know, U.S. history, obviously, and world history to media and philosophy and political science. So we have sort of this domain map, we call it, of all of the content that could be covered. And we develop these heat maps grade by grade and topic by topic that sort of allow you to visually see what students are learning when. And it's a really wonderful way to start thinking about, and it just makes it so obvious for school districts when something is missing in a really concrete way.
Right, it really is. And, you know, I would ask you something about that. Because you said, you know, you look at U.S. history, you look at world history, and talk about things that are overlooked, all right? Here in the Western part of the world, I'll say it that way, okay, we basically, for the most part, have overlooked Eastern history, i.e. the history
mm-hmm.
of the Middle East and Asia. Okay, as we look at world history, I mean, we say Marco Polo walked to China, okay, and that's basically what we cover when it comes to Asian history. Yet the impact of it all, you know, is really, really important. When you looked at the varied curriculum, did you also note what was missing? Okay, and kind of adding that in, I hope, because the world is a global, well, it sounds stupid, it's a redundant statement. You know, we're talking about globalization, okay? We don't understand what goes on. Yeah, so I'm just curious, you know, as you looked at those pieces of curriculum, did you notice stuff that was missing? That was a long way of asking
absolutely.
That question, by the way, Kelly. That was a very long way
so
of asking that question.
So you're totally right. Most of the social studies curricula that we get in the U.S. is American and Eurocentric. One of the biggest issues that we see is that often African and South American history aren't mentioned at all. And if they are, they only come up in the context of colonialism, right? So there's only this sort of deficit approach. And this is a huge equity issue for a lot of our kids. Where
Thank
if
you.
That's their heritage and their background, it's really disappointing to be basically implicitly told that
left
those
out.
Things don't matter.
Yeah.
Right.
You're left out.
If you're of Asian descent,
okay, and how many millions of Americans are of Asian descent? We leave that whole thing
Absolutely,
out, too.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah. Not,
right, and if we talk about this in enormous and hugely diverse continent of Asia, right, maybe kids are getting a little bit of Chinese history, but if you're from India, right, what a rich history there. If you're from Thailand, there's a huge diversity. And to say that we've covered it because we talked about, you know, China for 3 weeks in seventh grade just isn't doing it justice. And the other problem
right.
we see, too, is that a lot of, you know, urban districts, because they're sort of aware of this problem, will have sort of specific units that they've tried to work in that are, you know, it's Asian American History Month, or it's right now it's September, it's Hispanic Heritage Month. But then, you know, so they've made this point, but those kinds of topics get relegated to these very specific sort of other pieces of the curriculum.
They're separate. There's not a flow of the history. There's not a flow of the study. It's separated out, so it's absurd. It's absurd. Hopefully we're learning a good lesson from all this. I have to tell you, and it takes a long time for that to happen, okay? But hopefully it's going to happen. So when you put all this together and you looked at all the curriculums and you created the map so people could see what's going on. And by the way, it must be a fairly interactive thing on the web is what I'm thinking. Is that what it is?
Yeah, so we have a database online, and that our reviewers work with, and that's where they input all their information, and it generates these maps. And we also have like a unit coherence map that gets generated. And the partners, our school districts that we're working with, can actually go in and sort of play with these tools and see for themselves, really. How they're doing and what they want to take away from these findings. And, you know, we have already, so our first two reviews were major urban districts in the U.S. And we've already seen.
Can you say which one?
I don't want to say which ones because I'm about to say something sort of negative about one of them, and I think they're doing a great job.
Yeah,
but,
okay.
You know, we've already started to see real changes taking place. So, for example, you know, this thing I was talking about with sort of student heritage getting siloed to specific things, one of our first curricula, they had a kindergarten unit on holidays and traditions, right? And something like 90% of students in this district are African American, but that unit didn't include Ramadan or Kwanzaa at all, right?
Sorry.
And that's a really easy fix for them.
Yeah, that's really bad. Yeah, that's all I can say.
Yeah, it's really disappointing and upsetting.
It's like that's actually like a skit on Saturday Night Live.
But it's also right a very easy, concrete thing that they can do that's going to make a difference for their kids, right? And especially at that young age, feeling like you're represented, feeling like you're included in what you're learning in school. That's going to go a long way for the future of those kids. And to be able to point out, here is a specific place that you can make a change tomorrow, right? Rather than saying, you know, we're going to do a whole cloth new adoption of curricula, it's a lot of work to evaluate curricula to this sort of level of specificity. And, you know, every curricula has challenges or problems, and the more that we can start to point out, here are really, you know, specific things that school districts can be doing to make sure that they're providing the kind of experience and content that they want for their students that's locally specific to what their needs and concerns are,
That's cool.
The better we're going to be able to serve kids.
Without question. So I live about 45 minutes from Portland, Maine, in the woods, all right? And so I'll call it a rural district. All right, we're not suburban, we're more rural, okay? And just because we're just outside that suburban ring, so I'll call it that. So if a teacher from here goes to the knowledge map, all right, how do they apply that? All right, do they fill in like a questionnaire of what's going on in their particular district and it's matched to what's on the knowledge map? Or is the knowledge map more generic, okay, and they have to kind of think it through? I'm just trying to get a picture of it, a verbal picture of it, so to speak.
Right. So right now we're evaluating specific curricula. So if they were concerned about the quality of the curriculum in their district, they could talk to their administrators about having us review their specific curricula.
We're also
making a real effort right now to evaluate major commercial curriculum that are widely used and available. So our first major commercial curriculum is right now we're evaluating the Pearson My World curriculum, which is a K-8 social studies curriculum, and that's used across the country. And those findings will be publicly available once they're ready. So if you're in a district where you're using that curriculum, you can go and find out sort of what you think about it. And we're working with, our plan is over the next year to be able to roll out a few of these major commercial curricula and also, you know, popular sort of nonprofit resources that are online as well. So we'll be reviewing the iCivics materials.
Oh, well, good friends of mine, Louise Dubé. She runs
iCivics.
Yeah,
we're going to be looking at the...
Yeah, my buddy. Yeah,
oh,
Louise.
Yeah. I've seen her speak. She's great. We're going to be looking at the 1619 Project, which is a whole other thing coming up.
Yeah,
so,
the slavery thing,
So our hope is really that this can be a tool for teachers to think about, and administrators, and even state level, to think about, you know, what are we offering to our students? And what are the places that we want to make sure, you know, we're giving them the content and the that we're being inclusive and equitable in how we're talking about things and really making sure that they have a chance to develop a really strong sense of the world and to be able to move through it comfortably throughout their lives.
Right, I have two questions. Okay, as they look through this, and you said you're as an example, just use Pearson's as an example. Okay, so they're using the Pearson material. They'll go through this. Will they see what again? Not a derogatory statement about Pearson. Will they see what's missing or what they need to add in or something like that? And also as they learn about the correctness, so to speak, of their social studies curriculum at any given school district. It sounds to me like they can also eventually, if they wish to, avail themselves of the work you guys do at the Institute for Educational Policy. You guys can come in and work with them. Is that correct?
Yeah. Yes. So there's sort of three pieces of the reviews that people can look at. So the first is this heat map that I mentioned.
Yep.
Which makes really clear sort of what are the areas of knowledge that are being covered really well and what's kind of missing. There's sort of quality and coherence. So within units, we're looking at both the quality of text and how closely they relate to each other. So, you know, sometimes a curriculum can do a really good job of providing the kind of depth and breadth that a district wants. But, you know, a lot of the resources are really low quality or vice versa. And then the third piece, which is unique to the social studies knowledge map and which we're really excited about, is that there's a unit level analysis that looks at all of the resources in that unit holistically and also at the teacher-facing instructions and evaluates to what extent that unit presents multiple perspectives on an issue and encourages teachers to give students the opportunity to have discussions and make up their own minds.
Critical thinking.
For themselves.
Critical thinking.
So those scores are unit by unit as well. And that also we think is a hugely important part of.
It's really important.
You know, there's definitely a lot of one-sided social studies curricula out there, and that is just disingenuous to sort of what history is and how people think about it. You know, to present to students that history is a timeline of settled facts and dates.
Thank you.
Is not sort of the the concept we want to be imparting.
As the old saw goes, the winners write the history. Okay, and. It's an old line, and it's true. And it is not settled facts. It is always open to – well, sure, facts are there, but the interpretation of the facts can be different. Okay, that's my point. Facts are facts, okay? But the interpretation of those facts can be very, very different. I wanted to ask you, and this is key, are you guys working with NCSS, the National Council for the Social Studies? Are they aware of your work?
I have a bit of a relationship with NCSS, but we have not yet been able to present this project there. But I would love to. That's definitely something that's on the horizon, I think.
Well, if you want me to, because he's a good friend of mine. We were just yesterday in communication. Larry Paska runs NCSS. You want me to send him this show? I'd love to. I was going to do that.
Sure, that would be wonderful.
Right. Because, I mean, he's a good buddy. Okay. He's a great guy, by the way. National Council for the Social Studies, everybody. Okay. They're lovely people. And they're, by the way, their conference, it was going to be in Austin. I was going to be there. Okay. And, of course, there is no conference in Austin. It's virtual. So we're going to have a show in a couple of weeks about how they're planning their virtual conference, NCSS. Okay?
I will be presenting. Yep.
There you go. Are you going to be presenting? There you go. Are you going to be presenting the knowledge map?
Not the knowledge map this time, but I will be presenting at that conference some of my work on my dissertation. It's in early December, so that's a – I guess I won't see you there because it's not happening.
No, you won't see me there. And because you won't see me there, just remember I look just like Brad Pitt.
Okay. I'll
keep that in mind. Okay? It's the perfect visual to have in mind when you're talking to me. Okay, so that should be a problem. Right? Is that right, Angelina? Is that correct? Hello, Kelly?
Oh, sorry.
I said Angelina,
yeah,
is that correct?
That
was a joke.
Like...
You're not really Angelina, you're actually you're Kelly. Okay, all right, we won't get into that right now, okay? But at any rate, just think, that's really good you're going to be at NCSS. That's really a terrific thing. And I just feel so bad because Austin is going to be, as usual, a blast. And like every other conference, it's, you know, has to be virtual. It'll still be good, but it has to be virtual. What can I tell you? This is great stuff, but let's get back to what the GHU was doing. I just want to make this clear. Everybody can – now, let me just make this clear. Anyone on the 29th can register for the webinar, right? The webinar's on the 29th. They can probably register today. Okay, is it over on your website, on the GHU website?
I believe there's also a link on our website, which is it's edpolicy.education.ghu.edu. I think the best way to find it.
Hold it, everybody. Just look up Johns Hopkins Institute for Education Policy. Always easier. Johns Hopkins Institute for Education Policy. All right? And the webinar.
And if you go again, our Twitter is the best place to find a direct link to register for the webinar.
At JHU Ed Policy. JHU Ed Policy, all one word. Okay, and we'll make sure we get it out from this end as well. You don't have to have a press release on that, do you? Did you guys put out a press release? Do you know?
I believe we do. If you touch base with Stacy, who I know you were talking about when you saw
Ashley talked to Stacy. Yeah. Okay, I'm gonna send her an email today. Okay, and I'll get that press release. We'll get that up on site as well. It's late to do that, but we'll do the best we can over there. Okay, this is key, and I want to say something else here. You know, we are, and Kelly, I hope you join our consortium at ace-ed.org. Okay, it's free to educators, and it's all about equity. And my point here is that as we look at programs in social studies, and I'll say it again, the winners write the history, all right? We got to be careful about that, all right? And but your thing about that big urban district where they're not celebrating the African-American holidays, okay, absolutely crazy, all right? This is, as much as anything else, it's an equity issue. All right. It really is. And we're really learning that now more than ever. OK, with all the questions about social justice, with the pandemic, literally peeling away the layers of the onion, et cetera. OK, so this becomes incredibly, incredibly important. And what they do at the Institute for Education Policy can really help your district. OK, so get used to them, folks, and know them. And Kelly's going to get her Dr. Siegel Steckler is going to get her doctorate in March from all this. Thank you, Kelly. This is just great. Is there anything more you guys? Is this going to be an ongoing project or is it? How's it going to work?
Yeah, absolutely.
Before we go. Go
ahead. We have a number of curricula lined up. We're underway with a lot of reviews. And eventually we hope to be, you know, able to sort of provide a more comparative analysis across curricula, possibly even tie curricular characteristics to geographic outcomes, like voting rates in a city, things like that. And, you know, This is also tied to a bunch of other resources that our institute has that I know Ashley was talking about with you last week, like our school culture survey and our teacher materials use survey, right? So not just what is in your curricula, but are your teachers actually using those materials?
Well, these are all things that are so important. And you just said a word. I want to just question you. Again, I want to hold on for a second more. You see the word, it's a geographic conclusion or something like that, but you used the word geographic. Why did you use the word geographic?
Well, so curricula are usually adopted by a district, which is tied to a specific location, right? So we can't necessarily track every single student who went to that district and what they're doing with their lives. But, you know, if kids in St. Louis are all learning about these sets of things, and we find that St. Louis as a whole has these kinds of characteristics or those, that can help tell us something over time, potentially.
It really can, and I love the way you said that because, by the way, the National Council of Geography Educators works closely with the National Council of Social Studies, that they're going to be big participants, okay, in Austin. And a guy I know named Kirk Goldsberry teaches geography at the University of Texas, okay? Or he did, whatever. He's associated with the University of Texas, but he's a geographer. But he's an expert in NBA basketball because he took what he knows in geography and demographics of geography. This is important to what you just said, and applied it to what's going on in the NBA, all right? Oh. And he wrote a book called Sprawl Ball, which demographically points out where the players are shooting from. It's an interesting combination of he's a geography professor, yet he's got this expertise applied that to basketball, professional basketball. And my point of saying that, now the book, by the way, is called Sprawl Ball. It's really cool, and I know Kirk and his family. But the point is, okay, when you start looking at things from a geographical point of view, and you said this perfectly a few minutes ago, you begin to see different pictures, okay, of what's going on. So that's why you should get in touch with National Council of Geography Educators, okay? They're good folks. It's cool what you just said. I like that. Okay? Thank you, Kel.
Well, thanks so much for having me, Larry. This was really fun.
Well, I hope we'll see
a lot of your listeners, you know, next week at our webinar.
We'll certainly do all that we can, and we're going to put the word out over on our equity consortium, too, and hopefully we'll be able to get plenty of people over there as well. The social studies stuff is important, and our ignoring it, but putting second to STEM, okay, hasn't paid off for us. We need to really look at what we're doing here, and that's why the work they do at the Johns Hopkins Institute for Education Policy is so important. Here, I'm going to let you practice here. Thank you, Dr. Siegel Steckler.
Well, thank you so much.
Doesn't that sound good? Doesn't that sound great?
That sounds great. I can't wait.
Dr. Siegel Steckler, coming soon to a theater near you. Thank you, Kelly. You're wonderful. I really appreciate this today. Thanks.
Thanks. Bye.
Bye. Okay, that was the future Dr. Kelly Siegel Steckler, who's a research fellow at Johns Hopkins Institute for Education Policy. Okay, she's going to get her doctorate in March, we hope. Mention my name. Okay, and go over, just Google it, Johns Hopkins Institute for Education Policy, Social Studies Knowledge Map. And the webinar is on the 29th, a few days from now, September 29th. They'll probably archive it. Okay, and you can learn more over at their Twitter site, which is JHU Ed Policy. Okay, we're going to archive this at h-ed.org under Education Talk Radio Policies, Education Podcasts. Okay, everybody have a good weekend. We'll be back with you on Monday. My name is Larry Jacobs. Thanks for listening.